listening to Your Ultimate Life with Kellen Flueckiger, only on LA Talk Radio.
You know, welcome to the show. The heart of the matter, wrong finger, the heart of the matter. Every time I hear that, welcome to your ultimate life, here's what I think about. Do you believe you can have that state where everything you do is you love it and you're living the life of purpose, prosperity, and joy? There's lots of reasons we don't believe that. Today, I have a special guest with me, Kaylee. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. You caught me mid-drink.
That's fine. You're willing to, I'm willing to have you have tea while I chatter just a little bit more. So I don't do introductions. And the reason I don't is because I like that to sort of come out during the show. But I can tell you that Kaylee is a master of what we're going to talk about today. And we were just chatting before the thing, before we started when we were in the green room, that we have an obligation to bring our best work and our best selves to the world. We live in mediocrity, and we can't afford to do that anymore. Kaylee, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Kellen. So glad to be here. And really quickly, thank you for sharing your community with me. I'm hoping this conversation is super fun for them, and I don't say too many things to piss them off. Can I cuss?
I don't care if you do. You don't have to be careful. What we're trying to do right now is, you know, behind me, the screen says the heart of the matter.
Yeah.
And I want to get down to the heart of the matter and the heart of the matter about who we are as humans, about mm-hmm. what we're doing here, about what we are actually meant to do instead of chase like weird stuff that got given to us from some other kind of layer. So let me ask you straight up, what is the most important thing to you that you have to give to people that you have earned and learned from your own journey so far?
Yeah. Wow. Well, what I'll say is this. I'm a very literal person. So when I hear the most important thing,
don't freak out.
But what I will say is this, we have inside of us the resources to make our lives easier, more enjoyable, less full of depletion, the ultimate life, if you will. We have those resources within us. We are absolutely renewable if we learn how to give to those aspects that keeps us renewable, give to those things that keep us renewable. We have it in us. So that's what I know that I can share that from experience, specifically around inner depletion and burnout. You know, it's not something stressors in this world, in our house, everywhere in our workplace. It's not going to go away ever. It's always going to exist. But that doesn't mean that we need to lay down and, you know, surrender to that.
And you don't need to lay down and get rolled over by the steamroller. So tell me what it is about us. Our world, our society, the things we deem as important that creates this pressure cooker of yearning to have more and to prove and to do all that. Like, what is it that we have created that makes that so important?
Yeah. At the end of the day, in one word, disconnection. You know, when I think about burnout, when I think about depletion, yes, it's, you know, a lack of motivation or, you know, a lack of desire to really want to give 100% or, you know, a numbness. But really, you know, at the heart of that is a disconnection that we are suffering from because ironically, because of the pace in which, you know, we're, I'll say forced, you know, coerced to live nowadays, you know, where it's always on, always optimized, always like in hyperdrive. You know, we have a lot of, you know, examples in social media or online, on the news, you know, everywhere that we look now, that make it that make us think that we need to be operating in the, in this, you know, always on culture. So, you know, I definitely don't want to say that it's a fault of you or me or us, but we're coerced into this lifestyle that makes it very difficult to turn on, and it's maddening, it's exhausting, and it ultimately, you know, tires us out and makes us really disconnected, not just from each other, but really from ourselves. And that connection is what we need.
So you use the word disconnection and disconnected. And then right at the end there, you teased a little bit, disconnection from others and ourselves. But it made me want to ask the first time you said it, like, what is it that we're disconnected from?
We're disconnected from what it is that helps us feel purposeful, to help us, helps us feel, you know, vibrant, happy, you know, that helps us be more patient, like all of those things that, you know, all of those emotions and feelings that really are used to energize. We're disconnected from it. We're disconnected from where we're spending our time and attention and energy. We don't know how to read our body, you know, anymore, how to understand that, you know, our it's not just our brain that's communicating with us, but it's our intuition. It's our body. We're disconnected, certainly, you know, many of us, from what we care about, our values, you know.
So we're told, we're taught, socialized, whatever the right word is, that we need to chase efficiency, money, position, recognition from these things. Mm-hmm. And that is the critical thing, and that creates happiness.
Yeah.
And what I'm hearing you say is the relentless pursuit of that blob is disconnecting us from what you have just told me is actually more important and valuable.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, you know, the avenue is certainly more important. What's more important and valuable is that sense of peace, mm-hmm. you know, a good relationships, you know, whether it's with our loved ones or, you know, in the office with our teams, you know, good earth stewardship. I'll take it there too. You know, it's that those are the things that are important, and that that disconnection will prevent if we sit in that disconnection for lengths of time.
So how did you discover this? I mean, we weren't born this way. You obviously lived in some fashion in this place of disconnection, or giving into the story that we have to chase certain things and created that. But tell me a little bit about, I don't disagree with anything that you said. I do feel like we're chasing false promises and premises, mm-hmm. both, and that it's causing all this pain. But how did you become so keenly aware of this disconnection phenomena that's taking place, because we're chasing, climbing the ladder on the wrong wall, or whatever metaphor you want to use?
Yeah, well, I'll say a couple things. One, I wish that I could say that I was a hyper empath, you know, one of these people that could just, you know, absorb the world's heavy emotion and then apply action against it, simply because of just empathy, or someone who's super civic minded. I'm not really that way, to be honest. So I'm probably like most of us, that until it happens, until something directly happens to me, then, you know, I may be a little bit distant from it. And it happened to me. It happened. And the it meaning the depletion. And I, you know, after spending almost over 6 years at a mental health tech company, my job was eliminated. My role was eliminated at the company. And shortly after that, almost immediately after that, I sunk into I realized I was burnt out. And this is coming from someone who, for the past 15 plus years, worked with individuals who are burnt out. I was in a space where, you know, I'm managing teams of care providers. We all know, you know, how, you know, the conversation around burnout is an everyday conversation when it comes to folks who are providing care to other people. Yet, I didn't recognize it in myself until after my role was done. I had time. Okay.
No, go ahead. You had time. What?
Yeah. So, you know, after what I realized is, you know, from a friend kind of forced the word burnout in front of me and was like, you need to look at yourself. Like you are spent. And then I realized that, okay, I had some negative idea of what burnout. I thought it was for, you know, people who couldn't take it, you know, couldn't take the pressure. And I realized, you know, that that wasn't the case. And once I admitted to myself that I was suffering from burnout, I decided to do a little experiment and really think about what are the tools and exercises that I used to work with others who were experiencing the same thing. So I sort of used myself as a guinea pig to start off. It was an interesting position to be in, you know, as the patient and the healer.
Well, I guess it's a acid test of, does all this stuff I've been helping with other people, does it work?
Totally.
If you start using it on yourself.
Totally.
Right?
It's crazy. And then you find out, oh my God, this is good. And not only that, Kellen, but it didn't take that long. It really didn't take that long to turn around, you know, especially when you're at a point where you're just spent and really you're numb. I think that was what the problem was. I was numb, so I wasn't even aware to ask the question of whether I was burnt out or not. But once I started implementing some of the tools that we'll talk about, like this, okay, I can, it's a whole new world out there.
Well, that's fabulous. So it's interesting that you came from a place of providing care.
Yeah.
So what you just told me is you had a physician providing care or managing those who provided care for others who are in high expectation, fast paced jobs, who continually were expected to perform. And they did so. And I'm making this up. You can correct me if I'm wrong. Until their reservoirs were gone.
That's right.
And they were continually running on fumes, bad food, not enough sleep, until I guess some people collapse and have a breakdown of sorts, and other people manifest it in different ways.
Yeah.
And that was your job.
That was my experience from my job. And look, let me just add, you know, the company that I worked for, this kind of adds a layer of interest to it too. The company I worked for was truly one of the most conscientious companies around health, the health of their employees. You know, we had moments during the week where you could go and meditate. We talked about, you know, these things. They were in, you know, common parts of the conversation. It was atypical as a corporate place is, and very much in tune of, you know, tuned in to the health and wellness of the folks who work there. Yet, yes, to answer your question, the pace was extremely high. It had been a startup, and anyone that works in that space knows that that's, you know, years, 6 years of being in startup is probably, I think, maybe double, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm building a team, you know, one of the first, you know, global coaching teams and scaling it, you know, so that we could provide care to folks around the world, you know, and offer, you know, great impact in care and service. So, you know, the role was demanding. But it's more than that. It's more what I realized, and what I realized from talking to coaches who were able to sustain these pressures, to talking with you know, other folks in very demanding roles who are able to manage, and talking to old clients of mine who are able to manage, is that it's possible if we're putting, again, putting in the same way that we're sort of depleting ourselves.
So one of the things you talk about, so let's get into the fact that you just wrote a book. So tell me, tell the audience about the book you wrote that comes from these very principles. So now what we have is we have a very talented professional woman who's managing a team in a startup, which is demanding by itself. I can't imagine that it's not true that working all the time with people who are exhibiting these symptoms of exhaustion doesn't rub off on you. It's like doctors who get infected by the continual pain, suffering, and negativity of their patients until they either disconnect or create some other coping mechanism.
For sure.
So there you are. You lose your job or downsize, right size, company does whatever they do, who cares? And so you found yourself out of that situation.
Yeah.
And at the same time, collapsing from the continued pressure as you looked at yourself. And then you've now done a bunch of work and you've written a book. So tell us about this book. And what is the reason you decided this was important right now?
Yeah. So the book, just for title's sake, is called Renewable You. And it offers a framework for how to work through this inner depletion and how to prevent it. I love it. I absolutely love it because it's so freaking simple and beautiful in its simplicity. We also know that, you know, eating your vegetables for health is a simple thing too, right?
Yeah.
Not necessarily easy, but very simple. And I love that because, you know, it's not, you know, a complicated or any, you know, high intense program that you need to do to change your life. So I shared that based on my own burnout, based on, you know, clients who I had thought about, who I'd worked with over the years, and a few willing participants to serve as guinea pigs. I thought about, like, what are those elements that really help us to avoid depletion? And I've come up with a framework and an acronym because we love a good acronym, right?
I do. I can't speak for anybody else, but I love them.
All right. So to make it simple, the acronym is REALR. Okay. So REAL with an R. And it's based on five main pillars that exist for folks who are working out of burnout or trying to prevent it. The first one is reclaim. And this is really about pulling your attention and energy back. So being aware of those things that drain us and those things that give us life, right? That often we forget. And that's actually usually where I start with the people. That's where I started. I love hiking. And the girlfriend I mentioned earlier that had put the fact that I was burnt out in my face, you know, said, when's the last time you've been on a long hiking trip? when I couldn't think about that, you know, remember that, then I was like, okay, you got a good point. But yes, so reclaiming our energy and attention is the first pillar. The second one is ease. So this is really around how to use stillness strategically. A lot of folks who are, you know, sort of drivers and are just on go, go, go mode have a tough time being okay with being still, right? Of implementing structures in their life throughout their day, rather, to kind of keep them at a good equilibrium.
I had a guy mm-hmm. I was just talking to a couple of days ago, and he did this many years ago, but he was trying to, he called that pause.
Yeah.
So the way he did this was he put a sticky note somewhere, like right beside his coffee machine in the morning, you know, pause. So every time he saw that, it's like, okay. Yeah. And he would pause for some amount of time, I can't remember how long he said, before he made, you know, his coffee, and he put this sticker in strategic places. And gradually, and this took months, but over time, he developed the habit of doing it. And it wasn't in the doing. He began to notice the benefits of inserting these moments of space instead of mindlessly moving from one thing to the next.
100%. And over time, you're touching on something that I talk about in later on in the book, which is integration. Which after a time, you don't even notice that you're doing that, but and change is happening anyway because that's how it works. But yeah, absolutely. The other thing I want to mention about ease that I love is just the awareness that stillness is something. You know, this is something that artists understand, musicians understand, that pause that you mentioned, that stillness, that's not just empty, vacant space. That's not just white space that doesn't have a purpose. It has a definite purpose, you know, to an artist, to a musician. They're able to understand that a little bit better than, you know, us average folks.
If you didn't have the space in the notes, I'm a musician. I'm not much of an artist, but I'm an artist, a musician, very accomplished. And without the spaces, like the harmony, melody, anything, it doesn't mean anything. Right. It's a mess.
Right.
The space is the thing that creates meaning around the notes.
Same with life.
Yeah.
We're a mess without the space.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
So what's next?
Yep. So next is the A, and so that's a tune. And this is around really beginning to understand that our cognitive intelligence isn't the only intelligence that we have, you know. And I know intellectually a lot of us know that, but it's really beginning to practice tapping into our somatic intelligence, like what our body is telling us. It allows us to tap into our intuition. How do we really trust our gut, and how do we know if it's our gut or if it's anxiety, it's avoidance, you know, how to tell what's what.
Do you mention, was it you that taught about the neurons in the heart and the gut?
It was not me.
Okay. So I heard somewhere.
For sure. They're the same. Yeah. In the heart.
Yeah. We got neurons in our brain. Okay. And we understand that.
Yeah.
We have neurons in our heart, and we have neurons in our gut.
Yep.
And so when people talk about your gut instinct or your heart, I'm agreeing with you really loud. Those are like real things.
Yeah. And it's connected. It's all connected too. It's not. Yeah. I'm glad you pointed that out because, you know, it's so easy when we're disconnected from that part of us. It's so easy to dismiss it as sort of fluffy and woo-woo and not a thing. But it is, scientifically, it's a thing.
It is a thing. And we're getting to the point now where we realize all the stuff we dismissed as soft skills in decades and even years past are the things that matter the most.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And leading others, which leads us to the L, matters a lot because, you know, whether you are running a team or you're trying to be the leader in your household, it's critical that we show up as who we are, you know, as much as we can. You know, trust me, I talk a lot about performance in my book and how that's an area that I struggled with and still struggled with. And by the way, I do want to say, I wrote this book in the midst of all of this going on, not from some like high exalted place of having arrived and having, you know, all of the answers and let me tell you how to implement it. Not at all. I laugh sometimes because I have my grandfather was a Baptist minister. And so I definitely have in my blood this like sense of wanting to evangelize a little bit.
Sure, well, go ahead.
But at the same time, you know, I don't like to think that I'm coming from a place of, and I know I'm not, because I'm learning every day, all of these pillars still. I'm not coming from a place of having made it. And in fact, that I don't know that that exists so much. This is a practice, and an ongoing practice as we evolve towards.
Well, that makes, yeah, that makes the book really precious. So yeah. The way I think of it is, you know, if there's tears on the pages and blood on the floor, then you know, that's something worth seeing. So keep going.
Yes, yes. And finally, we end with the last R in Reeler, and that's the reframe. I like to call this the mama daddy of the pillars. It's the keystone of them. It's the one that if you have all of the others and not this one, then it's probably not going to work. You probably are going to, you know, fall apart a little bit. But this is really where we talk about the stories that you tell yourselves that keeps you stuck. You know, the ones that, you know, may sound noble, or, you know, or that just might be, you know, dead up damaging, you know, the negative conversations that we have with ourselves. And it's really getting clear on what those are so that we can, you know, add to them so that we can correct them. This is the one pillar that I would say, and I think most of us struggle with mindset, we call it. I would say it requires, or is most helpful with guidance, with someone to help you see those thoughts that you're having in your brain. It's often hard to see them ourselves. But if we have someone, a coach or, you know, therapist, if you need a therapist, but someone else who we can, you know, really check our thoughts, you know, against, and can with training, you know, show us what we're thinking and help us to develop a practice against negative ones. Then this is the pillar for that.
So reclaim, and I like to, and when I read, and I've read the book for those listening, and I really enjoyed it, and I found myself writing some things down, and you know, saying, "Ooh, I like the way this is framed." So we have reclaim,
yes,
which means remind yourself that you are the sovereign and you don't owe anybody anything. Anything you give away, you have given away, and you can reclaim it. Your energy, your purpose, your direction, whatever it is you thought you owed, you can renegotiate, but to reclaim. Mm-hmm. I loved it when you put in ease in there, because that's the antithesis of this frantic setup. Yeah. That we've created for ourselves, where we have to be rigidly focused. And I would argue, and I think you do in the book, that this is not about ease and comfort and being lazy. This is about recognizing the truth that our existence is warped by the way that we've created this, and that the natural way to greatest happiness and productivity is to follow the rhythms, like seasons of the year and day and night and all of the rest of this stuff. And somehow we've overlaid this angular, angry thing on top of it that says, no, never mind, screw all that. Burn yourself out and a candle at both ends in the middle, and whatever metaphors there are. So,
yes.
And A was, what was A? Action?
Yeah, A is a tune. So that's being.
A tune.
That's right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. A tune. And L is leadership. And I always think first of self leadership, which is what you've alluded to. Because I don't care if you have a position or not. If you can't lead, yourself, you're going to have trouble truly leading others, even if you have authority.
That's so
and
true.
And then reframe was the other one. So
that's so true. Yep. And you mentioned something about the seasonality of how we should live, and because that is something that's quite critical when I think about this framework, or when I think about what has worked sustainably, like for a length of time, right? We can all say we're going to change a habit and give it our all for a good month or two before we fall off the wagon, right? But understanding that the way that our energy works is a sort of seasonal type, circular type, type of way, rather than, you know, we're just sort of burning and burning and burning and burning until we're burnt out. But understanding that sometimes we're going to feel better than other times, just quite naturally, is a key point of recognizing how, like, all of these pillars work. So that's my long-winded way of saying, you know, this is not something that you can just sort of do and be done and say, oh, my life is great. You know, I'm never going to have to worry about stress ever again. I'm never going to have to worry about being unhappy or being sad or being angry or any of those emotions that maybe we're not comfortable with. This isn't that. This isn't going to do that for you. And it shouldn't, because, you know, we're human.
It's like saying, okay, I put my hand on the stove. I burned it.
Yeah.
I pulled it off. And now, okay, I waited and waited. Now it's healed. So let me put it back over there. You know?
Right.
Like if you do it again, you're going to do it again. It's not like the second time it isn't going to burn.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
One of the things I really love about the title that you gave it, Renewable You, and we talked about this in your process bit, is, you know, you make a direct comparison to the depletion of ourselves. And depletion is like, you know, if I am digging a hole and pulling out water, you know, the water's gone. Or if I'm emptying the sandbox of sand, the sand is gone. So the resource is depleted. And when you use the word renewable, you know, it evokes the idea. I mean, we, you know, people talk about renewable energy and stuff that is, that renews itself. And it's interesting because the body is actually built to renew itself. So talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, this was, you know, one of those moments, I would say, like of serendipity. So this is how I knew that the work that I was doing, or one of the many ways that I knew that the work that I was doing was working, because I truly believe that when these moments of serendipity happen, it's like, you know, confirmation that this is a thing. So when I was working through my own burnout, I did, and after not having a job, I did what the most logical person in that situation would do to feel better. And that is, I took up shopping for the first time so that I could feel good, right? Like, we all have, you know, things that we need to do to feel good. And for whatever reason, in that moment, I decided to start shopping. A part of it is I was really sort of reclaiming agency around my shell, around my look. But that's a podcast for another time. But during this time, and I was doing a lot of thrifting, so I will say that. But during this time, I encountered a Netflix documentary called Buy Now. And it's this movie that really shows, like, through AI, incredible AI images, the destruction that the shopping industry has on our ecology, on our earth. And so that, you know, triggered me to really, you know, exploring and looking more into the climate space, which really I had no real interest or curiosity about, just general. I love outdoors and love hiking and love nature, but not in any way of, oh, you know, what's actually going on. So during that time, I, you know, started, you know, reading about ecological sustainability and also sitting with this very real reality of what I was experiencing, which was a sort of human sustainability or lack thereof. And I, you know, recognized that there's these two depletions happening right now. There's this, you know, drive, you know, driving the earth into the ground, on the one hand, and then on the other hand, us driving ourselves into the ground. Joanna Macy, who's a woman who I discovered during this time, she's a well-known ecologist, Buddhist thought leader, professor, I think at Berkeley, talks about it and refers to it as twin depletions that come as a result of, you know, living in this like hyper-industrialized world. And now we can say technological, you know, world. And what I also, though, realized, and I don't have the numbers in front of me, was that we spend so many millions of dollars to work on the climate crisis. We definitely need to continue working on the climate crisis because, you know, we're going to be impacted. But again, a podcast for another time. But we don't really look at ourselves as renewable. Like, we don't really think of our own energy as elements that can be re-energized and recharged or depleted. We don't look at ourselves like that. And so I, you know, had this thought that, you know, we can be renewable too. And I remember sitting on my couch being like, renewable you. That's where the title of the book came. We absolutely can be renewable if we think about those elements that will allow us to tap into those, that energy too, and that vitality to keep us going. So yeah.
No, you gotta finish the sentence.
Yeah, no, let me finish that because Joanna Macy, actually, she talks about this idea called the Great Turning. So I then begin to really see ourselves and Earth as interconnected much more so in her readings. And she talks about this idea of the Great Turning. And there's a step to it that discusses the shift in consciousness of folks, where we're going to be called to really do more inner work and more soul work to understand how we can and how we are connected. And I just thought, you know, I have this expertise in mental health. You know, I'm not necessarily one of these activists who are like, you know, out in the streets with the poster, but I have an immense responsibility. And this touches on what you talked about at the opening of the show, to share those things that help us stay vital and stay energized. And that's my part to play in this whole, you know, dance, this whole stage. So,
well, I love it, and I'm glad we brought it back to the feeling of what happened to you, what you learned from it, and now what you're drawn to do because of that learning and growth. I want you to. I have two questions, but I'm going to do them one at a time. One is, somebody's going to say, "Yeah, if I do renewable stuff on the planet, that's all well and good. Maybe we have to." But the real way to get the best out of thing is just to strip mine everything and take it all, or in our own selves, to just work these ridiculous hours and burn out, because that's how you get to the end goal. And, you know, if you let sort of the greed and the sort of framework run, and okay, we have to do this other stuff. I want you to take a minute and make the case of why it's actually more productive and not only more enjoyable, that's obvious, but more productive to operate in the renewable fashion. And you can use Earth or you can use us or both as an example. I would argue, think you would too, that you're actually more productive in the sustainable way. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, the what comes to mind immediately is a battery. You know, I mean, it's a pretty simple answer. You know, you can't go if you're not charged. And if you want to keep going, then you need to be charged longer, right? So, you know, I mean, it's quite simple. That's why I love this, because it's not, you know, overly philosophical or complicated at all. I'm competitive with the best of them. I played collegiate sports. I love winning. I love, you know, I actually enjoy working. You know, someone said, you're a Capricorn. Of course you like, I guess, I don't know. I enjoy it and can veer towards overdoing it and not sort of pulling up. And I also know that when I do that, I don't give as much as I could. If I am able to pull up and replenish, you know, you just think about, I'm from Indiana, so I think about the Indy cars, right? When they like pull over and, you know, get you know, rejacked, recharged and so that they can continue going. It's the same thing. Like you know, maybe on a you know, more daily basis where, you know, or more, you know, even hour by hour, you know, do I need to, you know, I've been sitting in front of the computer for hours. Maybe I should walk outside and stand in the sun for 5 minutes.
Yeah. So here's what I want to do now. Let's what's next? So you've written a book. Tell us about when it's coming or where it is, what's next. How are you going to bring this to the world? So you've had a personal set of epiphanies that have brought you to the place of learning viscerally and in personal experience that renewable behaviors is better, more sustainable and more enjoyable and more productive. So, gee, sustainable, enjoyable, and productive. How would we do anything else? I don't know, because we're stupid. But so then, so what's next? What's happening now?
Yeah. So I am currently building a community of folks who want to engage with one another and to, you know, just experience more regularly what it means to be renewable, what it means to stay. You know, quite often I mentioned that I had been doing the work or managing folks. And back in the day, you know, I used to coach and provide therapy for folks who were burnt out, but not doing my own regular work. Mm-hmm. And what I learned is, I mean, we all know that if you're doing something regularly, if you're, you know, a part of a community and doing it regularly, then you're more likely to stay in it. So I'm currently creating a community that will kick off this Monday, actually. and I can certainly pass on the information for that. But that will be a space where every Monday I will offer a micro, I guess you can call it a micro tool, micro lesson to help ground people during the week within that lesson. And then, you know, once a month, I'll have open it up to a longer, an hour long. Bless you.
I'm sorry. I'm not allergic to what you're saying. I just...
Well, I hope not.
No. I love it.
Yeah. So once a month, I will do a longer lesson. Well, a little bit longer lesson, but really that'll be the time for folks to get coached live and to share, you know, what's going on specifically for them, and to tell, you know, there'll be some storytelling in there. So, you know, I know that folks love to, you know, just commiserate on, you know, all the things that are going well, or maybe challenges that they have around that. And certainly there will be resources and, you know, within the community that folks can access as well. But yeah, so that's what's happening. That's what's happening.
So that's launching on Monday?
That's launching on Monday, yes.
So where do I go if I want to join that, if I want to be part of that? Tell me where to go.
I'll tell you. And it's a little bit long, but it's easy to remember. So it's community.therenewableumethod.com.
Okay, so community.therenewableumethod.com.
That's right.
So Here's what I can tell you. I've read the book, like I said, and the renewable you method is the real thing. I found it, and you know, I've written a boatload of books, and so I found it to be valuable. I found it to be organized, practical, and something that doesn't, like, you don't have to buy special clothes and stand on your head in the corner. Like, there are some very clear, easy to use things that you can do during your day without rearranging your life to go through those steps to reclaim and to go about these processes with ease and attune to your body. And then to lead and reframe, not reframe, reclaim, reframe. So I've got them backwards. But anyway, to do that. And so I would encourage you to do it. Community.therenewableyoumethod.com. So what didn't I ask you about that you want to say?
Well, one thing I want to say about that that I probably should mention is okay. that there is a founder's rate that's happening right now for the first 20 folks. And so I feel like I should mention that in case you're like okay. head, you know, on the fence. But yeah, after 20, it's going to go up a little bit. But yeah, so I want to mention that.
So, you know, that was brought to my attention just yesterday of the power of community. So I met this lady yesterday who's in London, and she had a career as a successful investment banker, majored in mathematics, and I had a math scholarship, so we had a chance to talk about differential equations for a second. But anyway, so, and she told me about this community that she created, and the tuition to be in her community was a very reasonable amount, and she now has 400 and something people in there. And you know what was interesting? She said she got some kind of recognition from the king in England for the value that she's bringing to the entrepreneurial space. And I didn't have time to dig into the details to find out if it was like a tweet or, you know, a golden plaque or whatever. But she just sort of mentioned that. And she wasn't like name dropping, although she could have been. She just mentioned it.
I would have been.
In this way.
The king found me valuable. The king.
Yeah, the King Charles. Anyway, whatever. So this kind of community can be very, very valuable. And I want to make sure you do that and pay attention to the fact that there's a fee to belong to the community, mm-hmm. as there should be. And the idea that people might have that everything in the universe ought to be free is nonsense. And I'm just throwing that in there because you know what? When everybody gives us everything, we don't value it. Mm-hmm. We put it on the shelf and we're going to look at it someday, or we put it on the hard drive. And then a year or two or five later, we find this thing and it's like, what was that again? And so it should be. So, all right. Is there anything else you want to teach us that you're dying to say that I didn't ask you about?
Yeah, I don't know if there's anything that I want to teach you, but maybe, you know, I'd like to leave you all with the idea that in the main thesis, if you will, is to just stop, you know, we don't have to live extractively. Even if we live in a culture that pulls us towards distraction, we don't have to live that way. To me, this is it's a way of fighting against and reclaiming my desire to live life in a way that's more enjoyable, more fruitful, you know, just more pleasant, more productive. And just all around better. Just all around better. So you don't have to live in a space of extraction at all.
If somebody wants to learn more besides community.therenewableyoumethod.com, is there another place that people ought to go? Your book's going to be on Amazon.
Yes.
When is that? Do you have the release date for that?
I believe the release date is next week, October 28th, or somewhere close to that. So,
okay, cool.
Mm-hmm, the book will be released.
Where can people find you and follow, you know,
track
of that?
Yeah. So social media wise, you can definitely find me on LinkedIn, Kaylee Fields Williams. That's where I usually live. So yeah, I'd probably say that's the easiest place. Just come there.
All right. So only her Kaylee name is on there. Kaylee, K-A-L-I, Fields Williams, Kaylee Fields Williams on LinkedIn. It's worth your effort to go there. It will be updated with the book release and all the kinds of things that are coming. Kaylee, I want to thank you for your heart, for your experience, for sharing the method, which I endorse. And I'm grateful that you have gone through the effort to create that and the community that you're building. So thank you for being with me today.
Thanks for having me, Kellen.
You are absolutely welcome. So I want to endorse this whole process. The spiritual shift is real. The pull for us to live renewably and at peace with ourselves and our environment and those around us is real. Yeah, there's going to be greedy jerks that think they got to drive everything to extinction. You don't got to live that way. Kaylee's right. It's not necessary. It's not healthy. And all you're doing is chasing your own death, spiritually, physically, emotionally, and mentally. There's no reason to do that. So take these ideas. Get this book. It's coming out in just a few days. The Renewable You. And go check out community.therenewableyou.method, therenewableyoumethod.com, and join that community to have a community and for practices that will help you reclaim your power, reclaim your sanity, and move forward all the time to live your ultimate life.
You're listening to Your Ultimate Life with Kellen Flukiger, only on LA Talk Radio.